Jason was on an around-the-world trip, powered by his own body. He was paddling, he was rollerblading, he was circumnavigating the globe using only human power, and it took him 7 years to get from London to Hawaii. On the way, he tangled with pirates in the Caribbean, almost drowned in the Atlantic, and now he decided to head for a teeny tiny island in the Pacific, Tarawa. But apparently, between Hawaii and Tarawa, there's a stretch of ocean, there's a patch where the water actually flows backwards. It's called the countercurrent.
There are stories of sailors, of course, going insane, going mad, because you don't know when you're going to get out.
Sailors nicknamed it the horse latitudes. Their huge ships with their lifeless sails could be caught for months on end. Out of desperation, the crew would throw their horses overboard, hoping to lighten the load.
This is the dilemma that the sailing ships had in the golden age of sail. They would get stuck in the countercurrent for days, weeks, months, and there's very little wind, so the water is flat calm. It's a very sort of static environment.
Jason would be sailing a small ship he called Moksha. It didn't have any sails or a motor, only a bike crank that he pedaled. Moksha was just a little wider than a bathtub, with barely any room to stand. There's a place to sleep, a place to pedal, and a place to stash limited amounts of food and water. And that's it. You can walk the whole boat in about 26 steps. He had to pedal all day if he wanted to get anywhere in a normal current. And if he ran into the countercurrent, there was no way of pedaling out. If he hit the countercurrent, Jason's only hope would be to find something called a back eddy.
Occasionally, you will get these little wormholes in the currents.
The back eddy would allow him to break out of the countercurrent, but stumbling on one would be sheer luck. With that in mind, Jason loaded up his boat with as many supplies as he could fit, and he shoved off.
I then pedaled out of Kona on the west side of Hawaii, and there was this definite sense of stepping into the void, of stepping into a state of not knowing.
All Jason had with him was some food, water, and a GPS that he used to keep track of his progress. Every morning, he checked his coordinates and then marked his location on his map to make sure that he was on track to Tarawa. He ate, he paddled, he slept, and he checked his map. Everything was routine for about a month. Then, on the 46th day...
I remember waking up and standing in the hatch with a cup of tea, and there was no wind, absolute silence. And I thought, wow, this is going to be an easy bit of water to pedal across today. I switched on the GPS. And I thought there's something odd about the figures, because the figures were pretty much the figures that I'd written down the previous morning. And the dot that I wrote down on the chart was on the same position that I'd written down the previous morning. And I thought, well, maybe there's something wrong with the GPS. So I rebooted the GPS. And I suddenly realized that while I was sleeping, the boat had actually been going backwards in the countercurrent. And I thought, well, you know, at this point, I could be in here an hour. I could be in this countercurrent for, I don't know, a day.
Jason jumped in the cockpit and pedaled straight through the day. He skipped breaks. He ate fast.
And after a day of pedaling on the spot, I was absolutely bored out of my mind and starting to get a bit panicky. And the second morning, I remember waking up and pretty tired, switching on the GPS, and I was back where I had been the previous morning. And it just got progressively worse as the days progressed.
This is what Jason did every single day. And every day, he was in the exact same spot. Any ground he had gained the day before, he lost while he slept.
And when I entered the countercurrent, it was just blissful, and it's beautiful I mean, the water is clear, so you can see straight down for hundreds and hundreds of feet. But then after a few days, this sort of flat calm, this totally static environment started to sort of work on my nerves after a while and work on my brain, because you can't really tell the difference between where the water ends and the sky begins. I sort of lost a sense of place, a sense of kind of cosmic fix as to where I was in the world. After 2 weeks, I was running out of things to sort of keep my spirits up. I could not pedal anymore. I had reached the end of my rope, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And I lay down on the bottom of the boat, and I curled up in a ball, and I cried. And it was without doubt the most demoralizing point in the entire 13-year circumnavigation. But as I was lying there, crying and having a meltdown, it occurred to me that actually the boat was going backwards, and that as long as it was going backwards in the countercurrent, there was a greater chance of the food running out and the water running out, and there was a greater chance of the voyage failing. After I had my mini breakdown, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to find a way to keep pedaling. As long as I could keep pedaling, there was just a chance that I would find one of these little wormholes between the different bodies of water, and maybe one day I would eventually get out of this countercurrent. It was the next morning, and I was just finished my breakfast. I was washing the pan over the side, the saucepan over the side, and there were lots of fish that would congregate underneath the boat, these little black and white striped pilot fish. And one of these fish they would come out and feed on the food scraps. One of these fishes I'd nicknamed Homer after Homer Simpson, because it was like the fattest, it was the greediest. And I started talking to this fish to say, oh, come on, you know, Holmes, here's your porridge. You know, you'll get any fatter than you are already, and you'll be feeding the 5,000 sort of thing.
At first, Jason was just talking to a fish. But as the days passed, he soon had an entire cast of companions to talk to, even though he was completely alone.
This voice, in this broad Northern Irish voice from Belfast, said to me, you got to leave that little guy alone, you know. Pick on someone your own size. And then we were joined by this German former U-boat commander, old German sea captain. What are you doing? You don't have any experience of the sea like the German U-boat commander. I had one more that became part of this medley of personalities, this Frenchman from the Monty Python series. You ridiculous English fool, your mother was at Amster and your father smelled of elderberry. It was more like a comedy show going on in my head than anything.
Jason knew he was talking to himself, but at some point he stopped being able to turn it off.
I was just having a bit of fun. But then after a while, because basically I was so lonely and these guys became my friends, they did take on more of an external reality, if you like. All of these guys were very, very insulting to me. And we would have these ferocious arguments. You know, the pedal system broke at one point, and I'm just fixing the pedal unit, and these guys are just keeping me company. They're just arguing about the best way to do it, like guys do, right? Guys always argue about the best way to do things.
You don't know how to do the mechanics, you know? You take off the propeller first, your propeller shaft's broken here, and then you unscrew the propeller shaft.
What happened? Yeah,
you shut up, you ridiculous English fool. What are you doing? Are you going insane?
Guys, this is my boat. I'm in charge here. Because there was no one else out there to tell me otherwise, it seemed to me just a completely natural way of dealing with this very, very extreme situation. And when they did become a little bit more nagging and a little bit more serious, and the arguments became a little bit more heated about what we were going to have for dinner that night, there wasn't any awareness on my part of it suddenly going to a different level.
Then finally, on the 17th day in the countercurrent,
I'd started my day normally. I had my three characters who were keeping me company there in every little decision, how to make lunch, just small little things always. And then I stood up in the hatch. The ocean was like glass as usual. And I felt this breath of air hit my cheek from the south. And then I thought, this is strange because it's not dying down like it normally does. And it was just a steady flow of air, and it strengthened to this breeze. And I knew that this was wind. This was real wind.
These were the southeast trade winds. This meant he was finally out of the countercurrent.
And I just got back on the pedals again and just started cranking away.
Jason paddled for 11 more days. And after over 2 months at sea, Jason finally spotted the black ribbon of Tararua on the horizon.
I had been out there on this ocean for 73 days by this point. I'd gone a little bit crazy. And land means life. It occurred to me that I couldn't arrive babbling in these different tongues. I couldn't arrive as Serge the Frenchman or Heinz the crazy U-boat commander or the IRA terrorist. So I had this reality check. And so it actually took a pretty conscious decision on my part to, okay, guys, you have to go now. You have to leave now. And they put up a little bit of resistance. The Irishman was like, bollocks, you know, we're not going anywhere. Why don't you leave yourself? And then they were gone. And I was pedaling away in the very bright sunlight, just repeating like a mantra, like cold beer, cold beer, cold beer, cold, in time with my pedal rotations. Finally, the boat nudged up against the pier, and I stood up, found myself surrounded by this amphitheater of fishermen. They're like, where's the motor? Oh, no motor. Where's the sail? No sail. And then I showed them the pedal mechanism. And they're like, oh, my God. And then he started talking and jabbering. And just the sound of people's voices was almost overbearing. And then having to deal with conversation with other people again, not just with myself. And part of this also was this sort of sneaking guilt, I guess, in the back of my mind that I had gone a little bit crazy out there. We live our lives, our regular lives, in a quite a sort of rigid framework in terms of not only where we live, but also social ties to our friends and our family. And once you take yourself out of that rigid structure and place yourself in a very sort of alien environment where you don't have any of those reference points, then it's quite disconcerting after a while. Okay, I've done this solo voyage and I thought it was going to be this whole Zen-like experience of pedaling off into the mystic, but that didn't happen, and I got stuck in the countercurrent, and I went a bit doolally instead. I went a bit crazy. It's funny, it's amusing, but it's also a bit sort of sad. I just realized how incredibly lonely I was.
Thank you, Jason. Now, if you want to read more about Jason's 13-year circumnavigation of the globe, check out his book, The Expedition Dark Waters. We'll have a link at snapjudgment.org. That piece was produced by Jasmine DaCosta with assistance from Julia DeWitt.